Okay, I'd like to call to order the Board of Supervisors Personnel Administration Legislative Meeting for Monday, November 19th. We'll start with the federal update.
Good afternoon, it's Emily and Patrick. The House and Senate are not in session this week due to the Thanksgiving holiday, but they will come back next week. And as of now, they're scheduled to be here through December 14th. We'll see if that holds or if they end up being in a little bit longer due to appropriations bills. But the big issues that they need to take up are the remaining FY9 appropriations bill, the farm bill, and potentially criminal justice reform legislation. We haven't talked since the midterm, so we'll give you a breakdown of where things stand right now. On the Senate side, over the weekend, Senator Bill Nelson from Florida conceded to Governor Rick Scott in Florida Senate race after a recount. So as of right now, Republicans will control the Senate 52-47. The only outstanding Senate race is Mississippi's, as they will hold a runoff election between Democrat Mike Espy and Republican Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith on November 27th. I think most people feel like Cindy Hyde-Smith will hold that seat, and so the likely majority for Republicans will be 53-47. And in this current Congress, they hold the Senate 51-49, so they will have picked up two seats. On the House side, the Democrats have expanded their lead to 233 to 200 seats, with two races still undecided. There's one in Georgia and then one in Utah. The high-profile toss-up races in California pretty much all went to Democrats, as I'm sure you all know. California 39. Democrat Gil Cisneros beat Republican Young Kim. Katie Porter took out Mimi Walters in California 45. And then closer to you guys, Josh Harder took out Jeff Denham. And then down south again, Harley Ruta took out Dana Rohrabacher. So right now, the current Republican majority is 235 to 193 with seven vacancies. And as I mentioned before, Democrats could have, well, right now they have 233 to 200, so pretty close to where the Republicans are with their majority currently. Moving on to House and Senate leadership elections, House and Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats all held their leadership elections last Wednesday when they returned after Veterans Day. House Democrats are waiting to hold their elections next Wednesday, November 28th. No surprise in how the House and Senate Republican leadership elections turned out, Senate Dems as well. Kevin McCarthy will be the minority leader. He did have an opponent that was Jim Jordan, who is a member of the Freedom Caucus, but Kevin McCarthy won by a vote of 159 to 43, and Steve Scalise will be the minority whip. On the Senate side, no surprise, McConnell didn't even have any opposition, and Thune will be the whip for the majority. And then, of course, Senator Schumer will remain leader for the Democrats, and Durbin will be the minority whip. So, of course, the big focus is on Leader Pelosi. As I'm sure you all have seen in the news, there's been a few members who have been talking about there needs to be new leadership, and but there hasn't been anyone willing to formally challenge her to this point. A member from Ohio and former head of the Congressional Black Caucus, Marsha Fudge, could potentially challenge Pelosi, and she said she would think about it over the Thanksgiving holiday. She's been in office since 2008. The 116th Congress would be her sixth term. Today, this is what people are buzzing about. 16 House Democrats sent a letter opposing Leader Pelosi as the next speaker. And there are rumors of other possible candidates to be floated, but again, as I said earlier, we haven't seen anything official. What's interesting about those 16 is that because right now Democrats have 233 seats, she can only afford to lose 15 votes. That letter includes 11 incumbents, 4 freshmen, and then one candidate whose race hasn't been called yet. There were 3 members that were not included in that letter who have said they would oppose, so there could be as many as 19 opposing. If no one comes out and officially says they would challenge her, I mean, I think people feel like she will be the next speaker. She just may have to cut some sort of deal with some of these Democrats. And of course, as people say, never count her out. But, you know, I think it just makes it a little bit more difficult with that letter going out today. And then closer to home, just wanted to note that Barbara Lee is running for Democratic Caucus Chair. She will be running against Hakeem Jeffries from New York. He's coming up on his fourth term, and he's kind of seen as a rising star in the Congressional Black Caucus. So we'll see how that plays out. Congresswoman Lee actually ran for this seat a couple of years ago in the minority and ended up being bested by Linda Sanchez from Southern California, who was actually in the race until I think last week when her husband was indicted on federal charges, so she withdrew her name from that. Patrick's here, and he's going to touch on some of the issues that they will be focused on in the lame duck.
Yeah, right now, just a quick update on appropriations. Not much has changed in the last week, but there are seven appropriations bills currently under a continuing resolution that will expire December 7th. Four of those bills, transportation, HUD, agriculture, financial services, and interior and environment, have already been packaged into a minibus on its own. But Congress will either move that minibus and another one consisting of the other three bills, which are state foreign operations, commerce, justice, science, and homeland security, or they'll move all seven bills together into one package. That's an option. And then also, if none of this comes together, they'll likely pass another CR that will extend into the next Congress to avoid a shutdown. If appropriators aren't able to hammer out all the disagreements, like I said, there'll be a partial shutdown. And there's a dispute with the administration. They don't really know how President Trump will handle whether or not he'll sign all seven appropriations bills, depending on whether or not they can agree to funding for the border wall. The president did meet last week with congressional Republicans to discuss a strategy. And one of the options that they may do is force Democrats to vote for a single package that includes all seven appropriations bills, and then higher funding for the border wall, and then funding for the California wildfires, and then hurricane recovery as well. So we're just waiting to see what their strategy is when they come back next week, and whether or not they'll package all those appropriations bills together, along with the border wall funding, and then the emergency funding for the fires.
And I would just add to that, it really is kind of up to President Trump. I think right now, both House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, want to clear these bills and want to start fresh in the next Congress. It just depends on whether the president feels like he gets the funding that he wants for the border wall.
And then just a couple more quick updates on the farm bill. A final deal on the farm bill could come as early as today. That does not include the House Republican proposal to increase work requirements for SNAP recipients. Ranking member of the Ag Committee, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, reiterated that there's already work training components that have been part of the farm bill since 1996. We expect House Republicans to accept a deal in the lame duck session rather than allow the incoming Democratic majority to write its own bill in the new Congress. So we'll be on the lookout for that, but it could come as early as today. And then in terms of criminal justice reform, as we said earlier, that's one of the areas that they can try to tackle in the lame duck. President Trump announced his support last week for the bipartisan bill, the First Step Act, S-3649, which is aimed at reforming the criminal justice system by tackling sentencing reform and prison reform as well. Majority Leader McConnell remains cautious as his conference is not in total support of the bipartisan package. Senator Cotton from Arkansas remains vehemently opposed to the bill, as he was in the previous Congress, or in the previous bill in the Judiciary Committee, the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act. McConnell said he would be willing to bring the bill to the floor if the negotiators of the First Step Act, Senators Grassley of Iowa, Durbin of Illinois, and then conservative senator from Utah, Mike Lee, showed that they had enough support, the 60 or more votes that are necessary to pass the legislation. But McConnell privately told President Trump on Thursday that there's likely not enough time to bring the bipartisan bill to the floor, regardless of its support in the Senate and regardless of the support from the White House. One note on the bill, though, it differs from that previous Senate bill, the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act, as it would not offer retroactivity to in reducing mandatory minimums for nonviolent offenders. So that's one area where Democrats kind of gave a little bit to kind of get the ball moving on this bill. So we'll keep an eye out on this, but until Senator McConnell lets up and puts the bill on the floor, we don't really see it moving.
That's our report for this week.
Okay. Are there any questions? Okay, we have an informational item, comment submissions activity for several notices of proposed rulemaking actions. Lisa, did you want to say anything?
Sure. So I'm passing around, and for those of you on the line, I'll send an email right after this. There have been three notice of public rulemaking that SSA has been working closely on. The first is to oppose the apprehension, processing, care, and custody of undocumented minors and unaccompanied minor children. SSA worked closely with CJ Link to draft a letter to oppose the notice of public rulemaking that was issued on September 7th. The Department of Homeland Security proposes to terminate the long-established Flores settlement agreement, and it would allow DHS to detain families together until immigration proceedings were completed. In this particular one, the county strongly objects to the premise that the only way to avoid separating families is to detain them together indefinitely. We have requested, or Alameda County has requested, that DHS withdraw the notice of public rulemaking. In terms of status, the letter was submitted to the Federal Register on November 6th, as the deadline was November 7th. The second notice of public rulemaking that we've been working on is the fee waiver eligibility criteria to Form I-912. SSA worked closely with CJ Lake to draft a letter to oppose the NPRM that was issued on September 28th. This particular one is against the U.S. Citizenship Immigration Services, known as USCIS. They currently have a form called Form I-912, and they use three bases to determine eligibility for a fee waiver. One, the receipt of a means-tested benefit. Two, any low income as defined by their income at or below 150% of federal poverty level, or financial hardship. Currently, the applicant only needs to meet one of these to apply. What this particular drafted NPRM proposes is to double the application from 5 pages to 10. It also proposes to remove the receipt of means-tested benefit as a basis for the fee waiver request. This change obviously would impose a needlessly long and complex process, and it'll burden our most